This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, Music from DePauw. This week, student producer Matt Skiba talks with some of his colleagues about the Fifth House Ensemble visit. We go into the classroom first with Bonnie Whiting and then with clarinet professor Randy Salmon. Greg Risto drops by to preview the upcoming choral concert. Student producer Burke Stanton brings us news about this year's Young Artist Piano Competition and Festival. And I talk to viola professor Nicole Brockman about her upcoming recital featuring some of the members of our ensemble in residence, Fifth House. There are lots of exciting things going on in the DePauw School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. This semester, one of the courses students have the opportunity to take is a woodwind techniques course, and here to chat with me about it is Professor Randy Salmon. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
So this is an interesting course for these folks because they're taken outside of their regular instrument, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And what are they doing?
Well, they're primarily being prepared for student teaching, and of course everybody studies their own instrument and piano intently. But when you go out to teach, obviously you have to cover all the instruments. So it's an opportunity to learn all the instruments in the normal band or orchestra setting. Quite challenging for a lot of students.
So they have a semester to basically learn a whole bunch of new instruments they've never played before.
Yes. In my course, we teach flute and saxophone and clarinet, and then they study oboe and bassoon individually in the following semester.
Wow. So clarinet and the saxophone are kind of similar because at least they're using a reed for both of those instruments, but the fingerings are actually closer between flute and saxophone.
Yes, absolutely. The clarinet's unusual in the fact that it doesn't have an octave key. It has a register key, so they have to learn two different sets of fingerings. And they do relate, but definitely the relationship between flute and saxophone is more direct.
Right. So how do you do that? Do you teach them first how to deal with the reed instruments, or do you first teach them how to play with the scales that are similar between flutes and saxophones? Do you start on one instrument? How does one learn that much that fast?
What I did this semester and have usually done is to start them on clarinet for a number of reasons. There's the two fingering systems. There's open holes, so it's quite challenging. Mm-hmm. And just recently we moved to flute this week, where air support will be the biggest issue for most of the players. Then we'll move to saxophone, which is very similar in fingering to the flute and in terms of the blowing of the instrument because of the reed, somewhat familiar to them already from having studied clarinet.
So saxophone comes on as the logical extension of both flute and clarinet.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
How do students, are they generally able to get this done in such a short period of time, take on three brand new instruments and learn them by the end of a semester?
Well, it's definitely a challenge. I think the great thing about it is it gives them an opportunity to experience again what it was like to be a beginning instrumentalist.
Absolutely.
Most of them are accomplished on their own instruments, and some really never had too much of a challenge doing that. So this is an opportunity to really have to deal with the problems that might arise with students, not only the opportunity to teach them the instrument, but also deal with organization, discipline, all the other things that we have to factor in.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think folks might be shocked to remember that their high school orchestra or band director had to know how to play all of those instruments in front of them. They
Absolutely.
Had to know what was there.
It's interesting because I was a music education undergraduate and I had to learn all the instruments and, of course, student teach. And it was really great because I had the opportunity to teach on the high school level, the middle school, and actually after the first week, my cooperating teacher just gave me all the beginners.
Oh, wow.
So I was glad to have studied them pretty intently.
Right. It's quite an accomplishment to be able to play one instrument. To be able to play all of them is at another level of
absolutely,
difficulty.
Absolutely.
And so it brings a whole new set of teaching chops for you into the room, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Because usually
absolutely.
You're teaching people how to become expert clarinetists, and here you are teaching them how to become beginning woodwind players.
Absolutely. And that's a fun process. I think all of them sort of start hoping that things are going to work out, and then realizing just the challenge and the importance of problem solving and starting students correctly really seems to dawn on them. And so what I find is that by the end of the semester, they've really gotten all of their teaching chops together.
Yeah.
They'll keep working on the individual instruments for the rest of their lives, probably as teachers, but at least it will give them a comfortable start. And really, also, we try to give them an experience of actually working with the class on each instrument themselves so that
right.
they have to kind of deal with the situations that might arise.
Wow, a fascinating course and a challenging one for our students. And thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Oh, my pleasure.
From the Student Recital Hour of Wednesday, October 30th, 2013, clarinetist Daniel Hickey, violinist Jenny Miller, and pianist Rachel Robin perform the Moderato Presto movement from the Trio for Clarinet, Violin, and Piano by Aram Khachaturian.
Hello, my name is Matt Skiba, and this is another installment of the Student Corner. Today we will be talking about the ensemble in residence, the Fifth House Ensemble. With me today is Carly Tebelman.
Hi.
Gwen Everts.
Hello.
And Dan Hickey.
Hi.
Gwen, can you kind of tell me what Fifth House is doing here?
Yes, they are coming here to help us learn how to educate children in the Greenhouse community in a new way. And the way that they're doing this is they are using classical music to teach core subjects in the school curriculum. And so this is a new way for us to teach the children about classical music and also to help them learn more about that other subject. So that's one aspect of their residency here. And then another part is they're also coming up with a tailored performance for the Greencast community. They're collecting stories from different residents and then coming up with a performance that they can relate to. And so that's what they're coming here for.
How long were they here the first time they were here?
3 days, I believe.
And when do they come back?
They come back November 5th.
Okay, great. So, Carly, when they were here the first time, there was a performance at the farmer's market. How did that go?
It went really, really well. I was lucky enough to be up early enough to go see it and to go to the farmer's market with some of my friends. And it was really great because it brought out so many DePauw students to see the Fifth House Ensemble playing in some ensemble pieces and as soloists. And it also featured some DePauw ensembles, like the bootleg string ensemble. And it also brought out a lot more Greencastle community members, because I've been to the farmer's market a few times and you'll see about 20 or 30 people walking around, but there were just crowds of people there. And it was really great to see the Fifth House Ensemble on the back of a hay wagon performing classical pieces, pieces by modern composers, by composers that they know, and also to see DePauw students taking part in that performance that really brought together DePauw and the rest of the Greencastle community.
There were a lot of people, too, that morning that actually would walk around and say this was such a fall setting. It was really nice. It was really cool. The weather was perfect. And then we just had a farmer's market and a band playing.
It was really perfect.
So, Dan, after their performance at the farmer's market, they moved on to do a Starbucks performance later that afternoon. What was that like?
It was really just very casual and relaxed and really nice. They were set up on the upper level of the mezzanine in the Starbucks / bookstore. And they were doing mainly some duets and trios and smaller groups because it was a smaller space. And it was really great just to hear them play. There were DePauw students and professors that played as well. And there were a lot of students from the College of Liberal Arts there that normally may not have come to these kinds of performances. And there were also a lot of community members there. So it was really great to see everyone come together. During their breaks or when certain members weren't playing, they were going around the Starbucks and the bookstore with these little cards, and they would ask community members to write down some of their favorite memories of Putnam County. And these are memories that they're going to incorporate into their Music Can Tell a Story performance coming up in the spring that's all about life in Greencastle and Putnam County. So it was really cool to see them getting this personal touch put into their future performance.
It's really great to see how they bend a story around to make it fit to music and then are able to tell the story the same way. So in between their performances, Fifth House had a kind of masterclass and workshop of sorts. Can some of you tell me what that was about?
Okay, so they had a couple of workshops essentially to show us how they teach in the schools and what they do when they go into the schools to teach about classical music and whatnot. So we learned different techniques for involving the kids and how to come up with different programs ourselves to teach these core subjects that we'll be teaching through classical music. And so we worked in groups and we also watched them do their thing. And so we could see how they do it. And we were the students while they taught us. And so we got to be involved in different ways. So it'll prepare us to go into the schools eventually and do this ourselves.
Good, good. Anyone else have any comments for that?
Yeah. Earlier in the week, they also had a presentation on how to attract new kinds of audiences and how to develop an audience in a specific area, depending on what age group you're targeting and what the habits of the people you're targeting who would potentially come to your concert. And I found that extremely interesting because they put a lot of thought into creating fictitious profiles of people that would come to their concert. And they put a lot of thought into where they're performing, what venues would be good, if they could have a restaurant connected to where they're performing. So that was really helpful on a business end, I think, to a lot of students.
Yeah, what was really helpful overall was they acknowledged the fact that, yes, to have a career in music, you have to be, you know, a technical monster and just very musically inclined. But they also showed us that you also need to have practical skills. Like, you can't just graduate with your degree and your instrument and go out there and make a career necessarily. So it was really, refreshing to see that other side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. Well, we invite everyone, College of Liberal Arts and School of Music students, to come see Fifth House when they return on November 5th. You're welcome to either their concerts or their workshops. They're very beneficial to just everybody. We'll also like to invite Carly, Gwyn, Dan, and maybe a few new people to come back and talk after their next visit. Thanks, you guys, for coming in today.
Sure, no problem.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome.
From their recital of Monday, October 14th, 2013, soprano Barbara Paré and pianist John Klodfelter perform Nur wer die Sehnsucht kennt, from Songs from Wilhelm Meister, Opus 98a, by Robert Schumann.
Hi, I'm Fernando Otero. You're listening to Music for Life.
On Sunday, November 10th at 3 p.m. in Kresge Auditorium, the University Chorus and Chamber Singers present their next concert as part of Arts Fest. The concert is called The Hero's Journey, and here to chat with me about it is our director of choirs, Dr. Greg Risto. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, tell us about The Hero's Journey.
The theme of Arts Fest this year is art and the quest. And so we decided to take Joseph Campbell's idea of the monomyth or the hero's journey. Campbell was a sociologist and studied mythology from many cultures. He'd found that
the hero exists in everywhere.
In every culture, and they follow a similar life path. And when you start looking at that, it's really our individual life journey with raised stakes.
Isn't that fascinating?
It's wonderful. It's really just delightful. Even cultures that have had no contact with each other, we all go through this human growth cycle
right
together. So we've decided to take that idea and take the stages of the hero's journey and make one large journey from lots of different heroes by picking a different piece for each stage of the journey. And so we have The Birth of a Hero, Svelinx Gaudete Omnes, which is a rejoice and be glad for today is born unto us a child. And we're featuring a work by our faculty composer, Scott Perkins, called The Stolen Child, which is a setting of a text by William Butler Yeats. And The Stolen Child is a parable for growing up. Mm-hmm. And so we're actually splitting up this basically five-movement piece to frame and organize the concert in this hero's life journey structure.
Oh, that's fascinating. So instead of hearing all five movements in a row, we're interspersing events from other composers.
That's right.
In the hero's journey. That's fascinating.
And then we get commentary. And we get some, fun pieces in here as well. we're doing John Williams' Duel of the Fates from Star Wars Phantom Menace, and Bootleg String Ensemble, our pop string ensemble, is going to be joining us for that. We've got a string and organ arrangement of that, as well as Double Trouble from Harry Potter. So some fun stuff on here, as well as, of course, some really serious, great musical fare as well. We've got Mendelssohn's Hear My Prayer and Oh for the Wings of a Dove. And our faculty soprano, Pam Coburn, will be joining us on that, which will be really great.
Fascinating. And then you've got the fire.
El Fuego, yes.
Yeah. Tell us about the music.
It's from Spain, and it's from the end of the Renaissance era. And it's this wonderful genre that at the time was called the ensalada, or a salad, because it mixes church music with what was at the time the popular music, madrigal textures. It mixes languages, too. It goes back and forth between Spanish and Latin.
Sounds very 21CM.
It is in its own way, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but years ahead of
21CM minus 5 C's or
yeah,
so.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. But it's just really a great and fun piece, really dramatic. Of course, El Fuego means the fire,
right?
And the choir is really getting into the drama of that.
And tell me about this closer.
Abby Batinas is a composer based out of Minneapolis-St. Paul. And it's just a simple round that she wrote about 3 years ago called Be Like the Bird. It's a setting of a Victor Hugo text, one sentence. Mm-hmm. Be like the bird that, pausing in its flight a while on boughs too slight, feels them give way beneath her and sings knowing she has wings.
What a great line.
It's a great line. And Abby has three times now been diagnosed with cancer.
Mm.
And three times successfully beaten it into remission.
Mm-hmm.
And so that final stage of the hero's journey, we call the freedom to live.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when you've come through your struggles, you've mastered both the world of challenges and the ordinary life, and now you can live and give back to others. And so given the timing of when she wrote this piece in her life, given the text of it as well, I think it's just a perfect fit for that idea of the freedom to live.
This is a fascinating program as part of an exciting arts fest about the quest, and you've done a brilliant job of walking us through this journey.
It'll be a lot of fun. We'll have projections as well with, you know, some images from the films and things like that to help situate everyone in mythological images as well to from Baroque art to put us in the frame of mind. Should be fun.
Sunday, November the 10th at 3 p.m. in Kresge. You won't want to miss the DePaul University Chorus and Chamber Singers with Greg Risto, Owen Hartnett, and Carla Edwards on organ, with special guest Pamela Coburn doing work that includes faculty member Scott Perkins. It's going to be a great concert. We hope to see you there. Thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
Our new percussion professor, Bonnie Whiting, is teaching a music appreciation course. In this episode of Into the Classroom, we're going to go into the music appreciation classroom with two College of Liberal Arts students, Alex and Tiara. Welcome, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So, Alex, what's your major?
I'm majoring in economics.
And Tiara?
I'm a biology major.
So what brought you to music appreciation?
Just the general fascination of music, and I've grown up loving music as a kid, and it just hasn't stopped.
Good.
Yeah, I've grown up playing music, but I never actually had the opportunity to dive into it and see what it's all about and what it really means, so I figured I'd take this class and see what it's all about.
And how's it going?
I love it so far.
Yeah?
I feel the same way. Mm-hmm. I think we've done a lot of things that, as far as non-music majors, we wouldn't think that we'd ever do in the classroom.
Very cool. Like what, Bonnie? What are you doing to these people?
Well, we started with a traditional chronological survey of Western art music.
Mm-hmm.
But then we diverted a lot, and we've doing a lot of special topics. So today, for example, since we've delved a little bit into the 20th century, we talked about sound art, performance art, and outsider art. And one thing we did today was we actually created our own outsider art song in the classroom. So we actually had non-music majors playing instruments and engaging with new material.
Wow. So what was your instrument?
I had the bells, sleigh
and
bells.
You?
And I play the guitar.
Oh, really? Yeah. Very cool. So how did it come out?
I think it went pretty well. And actually, there was this one moment where Alex started whistling. They were doing a cover of Wagon Wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And I had directed them to use instruments in traditional and non-traditional ways. It didn't matter to me if they didn't know how to play them. But I asked them to make their voices sound like an instrument. And Alex started whistling. And I was so surprised. And you were kind of improvising a little bit and, you know, over the guitar playing. And it was actually so beautiful, it made me tear up a little bit. It was awesome. Really creative and interesting.
Yeah. Music just busting out all over in that classroom, isn't it? That's terrific. So you guys have spent part of the class time learning about traditional art music.
That's correct.
And now you're kind of jumping out.
Right.
Right. So what else do you have up your sleeve?
One thing that we were trying to do is gear our classroom lectures and discussions to what's going on in the music department. So, for example, a bunch of the students had an opportunity to hear a live orchestra for the first time, and it was actually the Indianapolis Symphony when they came to do the Chopin Piano Concerto with Garrick Olson and also do Shostakovich 5.
Did you like it?
I loved it. It was really interesting because I think without having this course, I would have never like analyzed the music in the way that I did. I probably just would have sat there and took it all in, but having taken this course, I was able to like analyze it and say, oh, there was some dissonance in that part, or oh, the tempo was a little bit faster in that part. So it was really cool.
What'd you think, Alex?
I really liked it. I liked the fact that we learned a lot about music, not just taking notes and stuff like that, but seeing the videos, but actually being able to see it for ourselves. And then, like Tierra said, knowing what was going on and being able to appreciate it, not just sit back in your chair, try to fall asleep, or you know, text somebody on your phone or anything like that.
So here you are hearing a major symphony orchestra, and how far did you have to go to hear it?
A block?
Yeah.
Not even.
How much did it cost you?
$0.
Nothing. Yes, yeah. $0. So, you know, what a great liberal arts education. Sorry to interrupt you there, but I just wanted to find out how they felt about it. So then what?
Well, one thing that's really great about trying to do a quick chronological survey and then branching out all over the place is that it gives us a lot of flexibility. So, for example, we compared the virtuosity of someone like Garrick Olson to electric guitar virtuosos in metal, that sort of a thing. And we had an entire class just on virtuosity versus anti-virtuosity. Or a day like today, we're all conscious of the death of Lou Reed over the weekend, who was an iconic musical figure. And we did an in-depth study of Hector Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique earlier in the year. And actually, part of that piece is about a dream that comes from opium addiction, you know, or an opium overdose, basically, and this idea of this idée fixe coming back and forth and all of these crazy dreamlike images. And then to compare that to, you know, the Velvet Underground and Nico recording from the late 60s and hearing Lou Reed talk about heroin addiction was really, really interesting. So we were able to talk about that and listen and really compare across genres and try to make it, you know, relevant to not just historical events and figures, but stuff that's a little more contemporary to them.
Right. One of the things that I'm often caught saying is that too much of our time is spent with dead white Germans when it comes to music, you know, and not that I have anything against it, because some of my favorite people are dead white Germans, but and I love their music, and if you took it away from me, I wouldn't be whole. But at the same time, music is bigger than that, and it's also probably interesting for you guys at your stage to find out that the stuff that those guys were doing and going through and feeling parallel exactly the things that are going on in the world today, and musicians today are reflecting on the same topics that musicians of that day.
Exactly.
So how has this changed your thinking about music?
I think it, honestly, as cliche as it sounds, it makes you appreciate it more as the course is entitled. I mean, you just listen to it like on the radio even, and you just appreciate like all the work and the thought process as far as like the time and the tempo and the dynamics, and you just really learn to appreciate what goes into everyday music.
So is classical music more real to you now?
I would think so, definitely. I think it gives it a chance. And before you just hear it and you go, oh, it's classical music, this doesn't appeal to me, it allows you, because you have the intellect now, to understand where that's coming from, the work and time that's put into it, and, you know, just the background of it. And so it gives you, again, I guess, the appreciation to, you know, give it a chance and to listen to it. And 9 times out of 10, you'll end up liking it.
So. Right. You know, and it's interesting. When I used to teach music appreciation, I would tell the students that these composers become your friends. You know, right now they have. The people on your iPod that you're listening to all the time, you know, they're your friends. And as you get older, some of that stuff doesn't travel very well, you know? Like, I'm not sure that we'll be, I mean, maybe Lady Gaga will be going on. That's an entire semester I'd gone without saying Lady Gaga. I had to throw it in there somehow. You know, I'm not sure. Maybe she'll be going on in 40 years, or maybe she won't. But Mozart probably will. And as we go through our lives, we find these different musics that speak to us at different places in our lives. And being exposed to it now is very important for who you'll be throughout your career. So I'm glad you guys are in this course, and I appreciate you coming in to chat about it.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
From the Student Recital Hour of Wednesday, October 16th, 2013, Lizzie Wynn performs Chopin's Scherzo No. 1 in B minor, Opus 20. Thank you.
is Nick.
I'm Zach.
I'm Renan.
And we are Time for Three.
You're listening to Music for Life.
Hello, this is student producer Burke Stanton. The School of Music's Young Artist Piano Competition and Festival is coming up on Saturday, November 9th, and has been expanded this year to include lunch, performances, and a masterclass. This year's festival will feature guest juror Joel Harrison, president of the American Pianist Association. It will also feature an evening concert from special guest artist Sean Chen. The 2013 American Pianist Association's Crystal DeHaan's Classical Fellow and third prize winner of the 2013 Van Cliburn International Piano Competition. Complete details about the event can be found online at the DePauw School of Music website. In the studio today, I have a past winner of the competition with me, junior piano performance major Rachel Robin. Rachel, thank you for being here today.
It's good to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about your experience with the competition? For example, who competes?
Yeah, it's geared mostly for serious piano students who are in high school. And my experience was great. It was enjoyable. I got to meet faculty. I got to practice music that I had been working really hard on. And meeting other students was really fun, just meeting people who enjoy something you do.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions for the performers this year?
Yeah, we spend a lot of time working really hard on our pieces. We're very serious about practicing. So when it comes time to walk on stage, just trust the time you spent in a practice room, smile, take a deep breath, and then walk on stage and just enjoy the time you have to play the pieces.
It seems like a very friendly atmosphere. Is there a good interaction between the competitors?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a competition, but it is relaxed. It's a friendly environment. I felt like it was a safe place to present my work that I'd been practicing.
And are you planning on attending this year?
Yes, I'm in Mei Pong's studio, and she's the one who organizes this whole thing. And so she really counts on her studio to help out with room monitoring and setup and just to help her out because she's always running around and super busy. And so we try to do what we can for her.
All right, well, that sounds great. The public is welcome to attend any part or all of the festival, the piano competition, the recital by the School of Music Associate Professor Mei Pong, and the masterclass are all free admission, while guest artist Sean Chen's 7 p.m. performance is just $5, with tickets available online or at the door. The festival should provide a friendly environment for young musicians to listen to and interact with their peers. Again, it's this Saturday, November 9th, at the DePauw School of Music. Rachel, thank you for stopping by and talking to us about the competition.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
From the student recital hour of Wednesday, October 30th, 2013, tenor Joseph Lepic and pianist Amanda Hobson perform Richard Strauss's Allerseelen.
Steh auf den Tisch.
Wednesday, November 6th, at the special time of 7 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall, faculty violist Nicole Brockman will be presenting a fall recital. Here to chat with me about it is Nicole Brockman. Welcome back.
Yes, thank you very much. Always happy to be here.
Well, this is an exciting recital because it's been put together like no other recital in your career, I think.
That is probably true.
Yeah, so tell us about the process of putting this recital together. There's some interesting things going on.
Well, I had booked the date a long time ago, figuring I just really like to play recitals. Mm-hmm. So I'm always happy to do one, and I don't always have a program in mind when I pick the date, but I assume that something is going to sort of emerge. And after it was scheduled, Arts Fest was then scheduled on the week surrounding the recital. Mm-hmm. And they asked me if I could do something that was related to the Arts Fest theme this year, which is art and the quest. And I thought, oh, that would be fun to do. So I was happy to do that. And then,
so you're doing Man of La Mancha all on viola.
I am, actually. Yeah. Yes. I play all parts, including the horse. No Man of La Mancha. Okay. But there will be some Schumann fairy tales.
Okay.
So there is some horse riding. There is a knight riding a horse. You will know him when you hear him. And then we are lucky enough to have Fifth House Ensemble in residence that week as well. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to me that it would be a really good time to experiment and to welcome them to campus and to invite them to play with me if they were willing to do that. I like that because I get to play with some people that I've played with before, that I've worked with before, mm-hmm. and then make some new acquaintances mm-hmm. as well. And that's really fun. And I've been thinking about the Lord of the Rings a lot with this quest motif. And, you know, first of all, I just want to make it clear that I'm not carrying anybody up any fiery mountains of doom. That's
sure?
not happening.
Do you have a ring?
No, not that I know of, but somebody might hand me one. But, you know, the interesting thing about that is you don't always know the people that you're going on the quest with, right? And sometimes you sort of meet them and you're thinking, we're on this quest together. And how's that going to turn out? And so for me, it's very interesting to have what I'm referring to as my merry band of companions, old and new.
Actually, you're living this rather than just presenting it in a recital. You're actually living the quest.
It's because, kind of interesting. Yeah. Art imitates life in a little bit of an uncomfortable way.
And I'm not sure that the audience can appreciate how it's more than just being magnanimous. It's actually being willing to live dangerously.
Oh, yes.
That you're doing here because yes. you're saying, okay, this is my recital and I have it planned and you guys happen to be coming into town and we've never played together before and we don't even know what's available and there's at least, 4 weeks to put something together. So let's think it out.
Right. Right. Yeah, you know, quests are dangerous things. They're not for the faint of heart. This is something that I've learned.
Yeah. So have you picked your program now?
Well,
we're finally there.
You know, the recital's in a couple of days.
Yeah, so right. I hope so.
Well, Fifth House has a very busy schedule. And although it's really lucky that they're able to come and see us 4 times during this academic year, it's not always the same people
right.
that will be coming. And so the recital programming was partially dependent on
who
is going to be coming. And I said, why don't you just send your violinist? There's Mozart violin viola duets. Right. Everybody knows those. We'll play those. No. In true kind of quest fashion, it's never the easy answer with the quest. They're sending their flute player and their double bass player.
Okay.
And you might
and
think,
of course, the book for available for those three instruments is just
well, actually,
huge,
there
right?
is actually yeah. an entry in that book.
There is
one piece.
There is one piece written for those instruments. I thought we might have to write it.
It's by Erwin Schulhoff, and it's a concertino for flute, double bass, and viola.
So the book of one.
Yes, pretty much.
So you guys are going to play that.
We are. They're going to get into town on Monday, and we're going to have some kind of intensive time together. Mm-hmm. But we all know the piece.
Right.
So that's going to help us a lot.
Great. And then what are you playing with your old, not your old compatriots?
Yes,
but
because
your,
they don't know that I've called them that.
Yes, right. Your longtime friends.
That's right. I'm going to be doing the Schumann Fairy Tales with pianist Owen Hartnett, who mm-hmm. is one of our staff accompanists. Mm-hmm. And that's really kind of a traditional quest-like piece. You would very easily identify in it fairy tale themes. Mm. And that's always just a lot of fun. And then I'm also going to do with faculty colleague Barbara Paré, soprano, and Jean-Claude Felter, some songs by Frank Bridge that embody the quest theme in kind of a more philosophical way, the idea that one is searching for answers or searching for people or searching for resolution. So it's kind of a less literal look at the quest, but it deals with those same kinds of yearnings for change, transformation, completion. And then we're going to end with Strauss Morgan, which I think is just one of the most beautiful songs ever done. And that really is kind of a transformative yearning for rest, completion, satisfaction.
Or is that the reward for your quest? That's such a great piece. Maybe that's the reward
It's about death, so I don't know what I think about that, but I'm going to hope to leave the concert hall alive.
Yes,
that's my goal.
We'll hope that you will, although you may feel like you've been put through it by the time you get this program together. So, you know, it's funny, we've been talking all season long about 21st century musicianship, and that is being willing to be entrepreneurial and flexible, and you certainly have proven that, because most people who are preparing a recital have a program that they've put together and it's locked down and you cannot vary it, not even a tempo, and it's exactly the way it's going to be, and you've been very adventurous on your quest.
Well, I wish I could take credit for that as a deliberate decision, but really it's, you know, I'm really interested in doing new and adventurous things, and so I'm always willing to try something.
And for the audience, this is going to be a real added bonus because there's so many performers involved in this single, you know, oftentimes you come to a recital and you hear the one color that that recitalist brings.
Right.
And you've really got a lot of variety.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be really exciting and fun.
Yeah, terrific. Well, thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
From their concert of Wednesday, October 9th, 2013, the Solaire Saxophone Quartet, consisting of Otis Murphy, Paul Breaux, Samuel Fritz, and Scotty Stepp, present the Allegro movement from Russell Peck's piece, Drastic Measures.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depaul.edu. We're also on Facebook at DePaul Music for Life, and you can subscribe to our show on iTunes by searching there for DePaul Music for Life. Our student producers are Anna Gatdula, Matt Skiba, Rachel Clark, Katie Sherman, and Burke Stanton. Our online editor is Veronica Pedrell, and our show is produced by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thanks for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week. Thank you.
It's Music for Life.